In today's case, we're working with Tomash, who recently received multiple analyst level offers and will be starting with LEK in the fall. Tomash recognizes that the skills of problem solving, structure, and communication, as tested in the case interview, will continue to be tested when he starts his full-time position. We're simulating today an interviewer-led case delivery with an industry topic and problem elements that appear tricky to the uninitiated. Tomash, it's been great to meet you. And are you ready for the case portion of our interview today?
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'd love to proceed.
Great. Okay, so let me tell you a little bit about our client today. Today, our client is a large hospital chain, K Grace. Now, there's been some proposed legislation changes to Medicare that have been affecting our client and will continue to affect our client. For example, there are some surgeries that will no longer be reimbursable at the same rate. As a result, this has caused our client to consider a strategy that would shift its focus towards less profitable surgeries by using alternative therapies. However, this client is concerned about the decreased revenue potential from this proposed shift in strategy. Currently, the client has a $4 billion US dollar top line. Surgeries represent about half of this total. Half of the hospitals in K Grace's network perform all of these surgeries. For this case, for our conversation today, let's say that all patients are on Medicare and that private insurance really isn't a factor here. So our key and core question is, what should happen? Should we close part of the chain, all of the chain, none of the chain? How would you approach this problem?
Okay, excellent. It's a very interesting case for sure. And I think also very pertinent right now with a lot of changes going on in the healthcare space. So just to sort of summarize up front, K Grace is really having to reconsider its strategy when it comes to offering certain surgeries due to changes in legislation specifically affecting Medicare. And they are considering, you know, a number of routes to pursue. Since some surgeries are no longer reimbursable at the same rates, there's a potential to, you know, change some of the surgeries that are not so profitable from a profit margin standpoint and change to alternative therapies. But, you know, the potential drop in revenue is concerning since surgeries do constitute such an important aspect of the $4 billion top line revenue. So do you mind if I ask you just a quick question up front?
Okay.
I have some that I'd like to clarify. So overall, the objectives here are just to maintain the best possible top line that K Grace can. Is that correct?
From what we know so far, yeah, we think that they're interested in maintaining that top line.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And when we're thinking about this, is it more short term or long term? What, like, how many years are we thinking, or even months?
At this point in the project, we don't really know.
Don't really know. Okay. And then if I'm thinking about overall this sort of issue that we're dealing with, certainly healthcare is a space I know something about, but would there be something that I need to know about these certain patients, these specific patients that K Grace is serving when it comes to how these changes could affect, you know, how they interact with K Grace? Is there something important to know about the brand or about the customers especially?
Not at this point, no.
Not at this point. Okay, excellent. Well, I would like to take about 2 minutes to draw up a framework for some different options, and then we could perhaps regroup unless there's something else that you think I should know.
Okay, that sounds good.
We'll be right back after this quick break.
One of the challenges candidates face when trying to prep for case interviews is using old cases that are from casebooks that everyone has been using since 1995. If you're interested in up-to-date cases with real-time solutions that include level 1, level 2, and level 3 answers, and over 500 of them, you can check it out at managementconsulted.com. In addition, for a free taster, we have every month a free case of the month. So make sure that you log on, grab that, and get started today.
Okay, so just to consider this from a fairly high level, I think that it's really important that we're able to segment these surgeries into different buckets before we really, you know, go any deeper. And so this, I think, would be really helpful because we're able to really see, you know, if it's more the revenue that we're thinking about or if it's more the profitability of each one that we're thinking about. And I know that you've already mentioned that the profitability is important. So definitely I'd like to sort of go back and think about, you know, how we should prioritize this a little bit later on. But if I'm thinking about the profitability itself, when I'm thinking about the revenues, we have to consider the mix of the surgeries. So if there's potentially a larger proportion, a greater proportion of the surgeries being performed that have a higher profit margin or the other way around, this is something that we should absolutely consider because we could refocus what sorts of surgeries Kay Grace is performing, whereas other providers might be able to take a look at the surgeries that Kay Grace might not want to be considering. So it could be sort of like an outsourcing partnership arrangement. And if we're thinking about costs, I think it's really important to think about what are some potential synergies between different types of surgeries. For example, if we eliminate like a certain type of surgery, would it make sense to eliminate others as well, because it would perhaps require like similar products or similar expertise, and that's something that would be very sort of niche and very industry specific. So I think where I'd like to go now, first of all, is to identify how we could measure this profitability. And I think that we should identify the different buckets of surgeries. Do you have any information about that?
Okay. Those are some good thoughts there. So, you know, what I'd love to happen next, if you would talk me through, I like how you're thinking about this as a profitability problem, right? Really thinking about both the revenue and cost side of the equation. And so using that standard profitability structure, considering both revenue and costs, at a high level, can you just talk me through what those different individual pieces are and what you would want to know, you know, holistically from the client to be able to get an idea about profitability?
Sure. So from the revenue side, I think that this will be a function really of two things. So it will be, if we think about the average revenue from a type of surgery multiplied by the number of surgeries performed, for example, per year. And this can be really helpful because then we can add all that up and get that revenue on a yearly basis. If we're thinking about costs, what I've noted here is that we should think about the expertise, and that'll be, you know, really represented by the surgeons, and that would be a fixed cost, it would be a labor cost, and then some more variable costs, which I think would be also surgery dependent, which ties into that expertise, might be materials, it might be things like expenses for patients who are staying, you know, after the surgery, which might vary in time based on the surgery. Going back a little bit to fixed costs as well, I think we have to think about, you know, how parts of the hospital might be devoted to a surgery. So that might be things like utilities, might be things just general overhead, and things like that.
Great. Which of those do you think are going to, in this scenario, which do you think might be the largest driving factor here?
I think that it would be the revenue because, as you've already mentioned up front, there are some surgeries that are no longer reimbursable at the same rates, whereas others might be reimbursable at the same rate. But I think at the same time, we have to really consider, you know, if the ones that are no longer reimbursable didn't have a high profit margin to begin with, that might be something we don't have to be concerned about. But if they're ones that perhaps did have a relatively high profit margin, it would persist with that alternative therapy despite it going down, as you mentioned, then that's also something to consider. So I would want to prioritize overall by profit margin at this time, you know, now that the changes to Medicare have come in and now that we know what the profitability would be with the alternative therapies.
Okay. All right. So I do have some information for you about the typical impacted hospital on an annual basis. So let's take that the typical hospital has 1,000 patients and that the revenue per patient is $1,000. And the cost per patient is $800. And the fixed cost of the facility is $100,000. So using those data points, what's the contribution margin for each patient? And how many patients would a hospital have to serve to remain open?
Sure. That's all very interesting. And just to clarify, the 1,000 patients, that's the capacity at a given time?
That's not a capacity number. That's what they see come through.
Okay, each year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, excellent. And then the 100,000 is also each year. Okay. So if we're going to find what the overall revenue would be for each year, we simply have to multiply 1,000 patients by $1,000 per patient in revenue. So that's essentially 1 times 10 to the third twice. And then if we're adding the threes up, that's going to be $1 million in revenue per year. And if we're thinking about the variable cost per patient, that's essentially 80% of what the revenues are. So that's going to be $800,000 per year. And if we're looking at the fixed costs, that will be another $100,000. So essentially, I know that we have to look at the contribution margin at first. We could, you know, if we had the maximum capacity, the hospital could potentially make $100,000 per year, you know, after all the costs are considered. But do you mind if I just take a moment to set up the math for the contribution margin?
Okay.
Excellent. Thank you. So essentially the contribution margin per patient would be the revenue minus the variable costs, and that would be $200 per patient. And if we're thinking about the break-even point, we have to divide the fixed costs by that contribution margin. And then if we divide 100,000 in the fixed costs by the contribution margin of 200, we can cross out two zeros, and then we're essentially dividing 1,000 patients by two. And then we get 500 patients as the break-even point. Does that make sense?
It does. It does. What do you think about that?
I think that that's actually pretty promising, because if that really means that, you know, if we're going back to what you told me at the front of the case, about half of the $4 billion top line revenue, it's really surgeries. So the fact that, you know, we could go down to about half the patients we're currently serving, that is fairly promising if we're thinking about how that revenue could really not be that hurt, because it essentially means that up to half of the surgeries could be eliminated if need be.
Okay.
So if we're thinking, did you want to say something?
No, I'd love to hear your extra thoughts.
Yeah, so if we're thinking about the fact that we can eliminate 500 patients, you know, from this existing calendar of surgeries, I think that it would be important to prioritize by the different profit margins, because, you know, essentially this $200 contribution margin per patient, I'd imagine that some procedures will give you $300, others might give you $100. And, you know, if you have about half of each, then you're going to inevitably, you know, average out around that $200 point. So I wonder if you could provide some information on that potentially.
No, it's still a good inclination there to be curious about the different profit margin and how these different surgeries contribute to the bottom line, of course. But it's not really a complete view of the state of the hospital to say that they could, you know, that 500 is that kind of final break-even point. Actually, we've got to think about how many, there's even a little bit more wiggle room than that, to be honest. We could lose patients beyond and below that break-even point before we would have to close the hospital. So to look at that here just for a second, if we would assume a discount rate or hurdle rate of 10% and an exit cost of 50,000, then how many patients would you have to lose below that break-even point of 500 before you'd have to close the hospital?
Okay, so I'm a little bit unfamiliar with this type of thing, but let me try to reason it out. So the discount rate is 10% and the exit cost is 50,000. And is this something, because an exit is essentially a project if we're thinking about it. So we could go over into like the net present value calculations. Is that correct?
So somewhat related, but so this exit cost, so this discount rate or hurdle rate is going to be established by our investors as an established rate of return, so to speak. You know, we don't want to go below that, you know, in terms of exiting. This exit cost is what we're going to be able to still reap back out of the hospital if we were to sell it.
Okay.
So
essentially we're looking for, you know, if the fixed cost would be negative 50,000, like everything after fixed cost would be negative 50,000, then that would be our exit. But then to work in that 10%, I wonder if you have any pointers for me there.
Yeah.
Would it be potentially multiplying the 50,000 by 10%, which would give us, okay. So that gives us 5,000.
Okay.
And that's sort of like our wiggle room with the investors. So going back to what I already had now, I mentioned that, you know, 500 patients would be that break even, but we could go even more than that. So if we were to go down to, let's say, we'd essentially be losing, like if we had 499 patients, for each patient, we'd be losing a certain amount of money, if that makes sense. And we would have to make that equal to 45,000 then, because we need to subtract that 5,000 I mentioned before from the 50,000.
Well, actually, let's take that 5,000 of loss and equate that to how many patients that equals in terms of cost. So what do we know about patient costs?
Yeah, so it's $800 per patient for variable costs.
Okay.
And if we're going to divide 5,000 by 800, that will get us about 6 patients, a little bit of change there.
Okay, it would. What if we take that 5,000 by the contribution margin? So taking cost into account, but not dividing
it by
cost.
If we're just looking at the contribution margin of $200, then that would then be, it'd be 25 patients in this situation, because it's 5,000 divided by 200, which is, that gives us 25 patients.
Absolutely. Yep. So, you know, below that break even, we'd actually be able to go down to 475 in reality. If we got close enough to that threshold, there's other things in consideration.
Excellent. Okay. So if we're thinking about that, that is very helpful, because that means that we could potentially look at like other avenues for revenue and, you know, other streams within the hospital instead of the surgeries that might make a little more sense if we're thinking about what we're constituting as our product mix for the overall hospital revenue.
Mm-hmm.
Would you have any ideas as to what that could be? So if I'm thinking off the top of my head, it could be more like ER specialty type thing. So more like trauma care, also perhaps psychiatric or mental health crisis that would not necessarily fall under surgeries as well.
Nope. Some good ideas and thoughts there. At this point in the project, we're still looking at it at a pretty macro level, looking at different themes and trends. We don't have information right now on the profit, cost, margin, et cetera, per different surgery type. In terms of the changes in legislation, though, that we talked about off the top, the hospital does have some research, and they've been looking into it. They've found that 3/8 of their surgeries will no longer be reimbursable after this new legislation goes into effect. 20% of the client's services overall are surgeries. Now, a government report has come out that states that this new legislation will save 6-9% in passing these new bills. So are those two pieces of information, do those align? Are they contradictory? Is the government correct in this statement?
So if I'm thinking here, I'm making the assumption that K-Grace is basically similar to most other hospitals in, you know, the area. So 3/8 of these surgeries will have zero reimbursement. And if we're taking 3/8 of 20%, then let me just do that math quickly. That would be about 7.5% of the total client services. So 6-9%, that's right in that ballpark, right in the middle there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What do you think about that?
So the government would certainly save that percent of their expenditures on on healthcare overall and on Medicaid patients. But I'm wondering if that, could potentially have any implications on other expenses that would arise in perhaps other types of spending that wouldn't relate to surgeries, because these surgeries are no longer being performed for the patients. However, from the hospital perspective, I think that because they're so dependent on Medicare, that's something that could really take a big hit out of their overall operations possibilities. That's almost 1/12. So it's almost like they're, like 1 out of 12 patients are, not able to contribute in the same way they used to based on the government spending.
So, Tomáš, we've looked at a number of different things. There's still a lot more to be done. At this point, what would you recommend that the client do next?
Yeah, so I think that would be really important if they would consider what those alternative therapies might represent in terms of like a change in profits. But I think that it would be important to look at, if actually just eliminating those 3/8 of the surgeries, which would be 7.5%, would make sense, because if we're thinking about the surgery patients, 3/8, that's like 37.5%. So that's 375 patients out of the 1,000, and they could afford to lose all those patients and still maintain profitability. So from, because, as we've talked about, they could lose potentially up to 525, which would bring their total patients down to 475. In the surgery area. So I think that this is something that they definitely should consider going forward with as a potential exit from that area of surgeries. Is there anything else that you think we should consider at this point?
At this point, there's not. No, just curious what you would have as the next steps for the client.
Yeah, so in terms of next steps, I think that it's really important to look at three different things. So first, if we're thinking about what we can sort of do in terms of bargaining power with Medicaid and with the government, because if we're assuming that all hospitals are working like K-Grace, I think it's important to know that, from a business standpoint, they will all be affected in this way, and they might all be able in number to negotiate some changes and really make a case. Second of all, I think it's important to think about these regulations and the legal requirements, because they might actually have some hurdles to jump over if they'd like to cut out 37.5% of surgeries. That would be a really big deal. And there could be some legal obstacles to that. So they might consider just cutting out certain surgeries out of that 37.5% because they might not be able to do all of them. And then perhaps certain hospitals could do certain types of surgeries, whereas others would do other types. And it would really only be cutting out like a smaller proportion from, it would be a little more like focused essentially. And then finally, I think it's important to think about some innovations in research that could go on at this hospital that could either essentially that would decrease the cost that we're dealing with. Perhaps there'd be less time spent in the operating room by the surgeon, and that would decrease the billable hours, which could perhaps increase the contribution margin, which might even really change the numbers we're looking at. So in terms of the number of patients.
Awesome. All right. Thank you, Tomasz. Appreciate your insights there.
Of course.
All right. Case closed. So Tomasz, how'd you feel like that went?
I think it was certainly an interesting one. I actually didn't have that much experience with the interviewer driven ones. I thought it would be like a lot more clear what I was supposed to do. So it was an interesting adjustment for me. And I thought it was, it was exciting to have to think on my feet with that whole part with the 10% hurdle rate and the exit cost. And finally, I think that it was, as a case itself, it had a lot of pieces to navigate and a lot of pieces of information that were important to pick up on. And I'd be curious what else I could have done to perhaps do better.
Awesome. Yeah, let's walk through it step by step.
We'll be right back after this quick message.
Feeling stuck in your prep process? Join Black Belt. Black Belt gives you expert help. You get 8 1-hour, one-to-one coaching sessions with an MBB coach. You get access to unlimited digital materials and homework that we will assign you in between sessions to help you quickly accelerate your progress. If you need to be interview ready quickly, join Black Belt today. Click the link in the show notes to learn more.
So I will agree with you on some of my overall thoughts. I think the case went really rather smoothly. Some context setting for you and for the rest of the group, right? This is a tougher case to wrap your head around, and so I recognize that as an interviewer, and also just thinking, I don't expect you to have the exact same level and depth of knowledge of terminology and concepts and industry depth of knowledge, even as I would for an MBA, graduate, right? Or an MBA candidate, for example. You just graduated with an undergrad degree. Is that right? Okay. So, I don't really have any qualms. I don't have any hesitation of giving a nudge here and there, helping explain something. So, I think a lot of us, when we start in this case interview prep process, and those of you that are currently in this world, right, you kind of feel like, oh my gosh, if I don't right now understand all the verbiage, all the terminology, the full industry context, all the terms that they're using, then I've already failed. There's a bar at which you need to, there's a bar you need to overcome. There's there's basic terms and formulas and equations and concepts that I expect you to know. And then there's a lot of gray area. And so it's not a negative thing to be able to lean in with humility. And I think that we saw Tomasz do that really well today. I'll come back to that as we go through some of those specific pieces. But, I think that when we think about these common evaluation criteria of problem solving, structure, and communication, I think you largely did really well in each. I think that across those three large areas, there's probably the largest opportunity for some improvement in the structure of your communication. And so putting that back in the communication bucket, particularly when we got towards the end, and I recognize maybe you didn't realize it was the end, you know, and I was kind of asking, like, what do you think the client should do? What do you think are their next steps? And you had some great creative ideas that came off the top of your head. It wasn't as crisp and focused and structured as it might have been if you were, you know, really kind of preparing for, oh, this is the final recommendation of the case. But the reality is that the concepts, the topics, what we covered, all stayed at a pretty high level. And so, you know, these were just some introductory looks at this client, at this project. There was still a lot more to do. And so, but we'd already been, you know, we did take, this was a 27-minute case that we just went through. So it really was still a full, robust discussion. It just didn't get into the what we might think of as the normal level of, you know, detail and minutia that some other cases get into. So off the top, we gave you an intro. It was a little bit longer of an intro, right? It had a couple different disparate pieces of information, had the opportunity afterwards, you know, for you to give some thoughts and comments. I think you did a great job at giving me a little bit of insight into your potential level of interest in this area, in this project, your level of exposure here. You went ahead and already, you know, owned up to the fact that you don't really know much about this space, but it should be an interesting thing to look into. That previews me to the fact that we might need to talk a little bit more in depth about the business model or terminology, et cetera. I think that those were a good couple comments to have. Then you gave me a recap of the intro. It was on the long side. You didn't need to, you know, especially in the interview context and setting, this is an opportunity where a recap is important to make sure that you are, you know, replaying the key points of information and data shared to you back to the interviewer. But, you know, we don't want that to push upwards towards a minute. We want to try and cap that more at the 30-second level to make sure that you're giving yourself time and space for the rest of the case. You then transitioned, asked some clarifying questions. I'm not sure the degree to which those were necessary. You know, particularly the one about, is there anything that we should know about the difference in patients and how we treat patients in this sense? It's a little specific. It was a little bit off target. It wasn't a terrible question. It's difficult for me to imagine a situation and a scenario where I would have more information to give you at this point in time up front in the case to be able to have that be meaningful to you, or to have that be meaningful in the way that you customized your structure, right? That information along those lines may definitely come up moving forward along in the case, but we're getting close to asking for new data there, which we know we don't want to do. You transitioned from there, asked me for some time to create a structure. You took really just about 2 minutes, just under 2 minutes, to be able to write out your structure. And then about a minute 40 or so to replay that structure to me. I think I heard you say two buckets. I think you had revenue and cost, more or less. Now, you didn't state it to me any more clearly if there were other buckets, but as you walked through it, this is another piece where I thought kind of I'm not sure if your communication matched to the structure that you had on your paper. I felt like there maybe was a little bit of gap or opportunity area here. From what you talked through, I thought you potentially had three buckets. I think maybe you had revenue, costs, and then something about, you know, surgery portfolio creation or something like that, where you went into and talked about the synergies between, you know, deciding which ones we might keep and which ones we might not. We could think about things like brand cohesion, you know, maintaining a consistent patient experience, you know, aligning ourselves towards our, you know, skilled labor force and the operations that we have more broadly. Actually, in the cost bucket, when you went through your structure, I didn't really hear you say anything about costs. You kind of previewed a cost bucket, and then you moved on to a different set of topics. A little bit later on, it sounds like maybe you had actually notes there, or that you had done some thinking around the cost of our labor force and our expertise, because you mentioned that when we moved into the next section. But when you walked through the structure, I didn't hear that come through clearly. So, you know, I certainly always recommend that you go ahead and list to me your buckets off the top and then dive into each of those buckets to make sure that I'm getting those verbal signposts to understand where you're at in your structure. And for everybody who's preparing for interviews later on this summer or even this fall, where we anticipate that they're largely going to be virtual or at least be a mixture of virtual in person, these verbal signposts and these additional layers of communication are going to be really important because the interviewer can't see what's on your paper. They can't lean across the table and just take a look at your structure and be following along with you. So these additional verbal signposts really help in terms of making sure that the other person's tracking with you. I did have to nudge and push a little bit to kind of to ask what you thought was perhaps most important or what was a driving factor. I did that, you know, as we went into the next question, you did start to lean into and ask for the information and data that you wanted most, which was, you know, what is that profit margin per surgery? Then after the next section, you asked about that again. So it didn't come across as obnoxious or obtrusive, but you know, by the time you ask for it once and I don't give it to you, you could ask for it again. I would maybe couch it a little bit differently. It's like, I know that we already covered this, but I still at this point in time would want to know what that profit margin is per surgery. I still think that would be, you know, really the determining factor in deciding how to move forward. At this point in the project, do we have any information on that? After the second
that's
time,
what I understood, that there was like another phase that we're looking at. So that was my bad.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And in the way that interviewers construct these case interviews, they often are their roll-ups of what happens over months or at least weeks, right? And so there often is a progression of thinking, is a progression of data that's being shared with you or shown to you over the course of your 30-minute case interview. And so it's completely reasonable to have that data not be shared with you earlier on in the interview, but perhaps the interviewer decides to share it with you later. And so in that spirit, asking for it more than once is completely okay. I just might frame it, couch it a little bit differently, put a little bit of a disclaimer around it, a little humility that I know that I'm asking for this again. After I ask for it a second time, I might not ask for it again, but make sure I layer it into my next steps, right? And in terms of my final recommendation, I didn't hear you harp on that a lot in your final recommendation. And so then I was surprised that it didn't come out at that point again. It's like, you know, I've certainly been interested throughout, and at this point would definitely recommend that the client look into what is the difference in those profit margins per surgery type, et cetera, right? You know, past the structure, we got into a couple of different math questions. And actually the first one, I laid out a little bit more like a creative brainstorming question. I wanted to hear you think about out loud the components to the basic profitability structure, to a basic profit equation, and how you might think about those in this particular context with this client in this industry, and then, you know, what data you would want to use, what you would need to use to solve the problem. It's a pretty basic starting question, right? Profit, revenue, and costs. What is revenue? Revenue is price times quantity. Costs, we've got fixed costs and variable costs. The key here is not stumbling on the simplicity of the formula, but also customizing it to the context that you're given. And I think that you did a good job at, you know, not using those basic terms, but going ahead and saying, well, it's about the cost of these surgeries and then how many surgeries we do a year. That is price times quantity, but we're using different language. We're framing it in a different way to match our context. And you had some good thoughts about the different types of costs that might exist. You kind of came back around and went into fixed costs again. To kind of outline what you meant there, I had made a mental note that I was going to ask you about it, and then I actually scratched that because you came back to it and you went ahead and already talked about what some of those things might be. You know, here again, I did lean in a little bit. I nudged you to say, what do you think might be, you know, a key area to look at here, a driving factor, so to speak, in terms of this overall profit question. And then you gave me your thinking and response on that. But the interviewer would love, whether it's an interviewer-led case or an interviewee-led case, I would always want you to lean into layering on insights at the end of your answers to kind of each question. You know, why is this important, or what does it mean to the client, or what should we do next with this information, or what do I think is most important here? Could be any of the above, right? But going above and beyond just answering the question and leaving me with some extra things to chew on, some additional thoughts, some additional ideas that you have from your point of view. You did lean in and ask for specific data, right? And at this point, I had data to give you. So I gave you some typical hospital numbers on an annual basis of patients and price and cost per patient, our variable cost as well as fixed cost of the facility. And the question there was identify contribution margin. So what I love to hear from an interviewee off the top is that they briefly recap for me that they know what they're trying to solve for. Because then I don't get worried when you start to go into your first calculation to be calculating revenue. I'm kind of like, uh-oh, is he going to go off in a different direction here? Because we don't really need that full revenue calculation to be able to answer the question that I've just posed you. So a quick recap to say, and then after you did a couple of very simple calculations, you came back to, okay, but I know here that we're actually looking for contribution margin. And so I'll take a second to think through, you know, or to do my approach there. If you were to go ahead and led with that, even better, right? I'm not sure what you did during those 30 seconds, because then you answered perfectly, you know, and so you could, if it was necessary to take some time to just wrap your head around what you wanted to do with it, I get that. If it was actually a McKinsey interview, they may respond and say, no, I'd like to just tell, you know, hear how you're thinking about it. I didn't have that level of aggression or, you know, kind of focused nature today, but, you know, the degree to which you're actually just doing math on paper, or that you're writing down numbers and kind of thinking through it in your head, then it's just as good. It's in fact even better if you go ahead and continue to practice like externally verbalizing that, because you were able to give me then a really crisp, polished, focused answer that was completely correct once you came out of that 30-second pause, and just not sure that the pause was necessary, right? I in my book, I don't ding you for that. It just would have looked even more impressive if you didn't have to take that short pause. You then calculated that, you know, easy $200 contribution margin in terms of patients to remain open, $500. And, you know, said, well, hey, this is great, right? We currently serve 1,000 patients. We could perhaps get rid of half of them. So I loved that you were in the moment and in tune with what was going on in terms of the data points of the rest of the case. That's one of the things that we always want to see our interviewees do. You're not just solving this basic problem, this small equation in a vacuum. How does this actually apply to what else you've learned in the case? But then there's another level. There's a gut check level, right? Of, do these numbers make sense? And or what do I think the client should do next? You know, in terms of layering on insights and talking about next steps, you know, we always want to do that in each piece along the case. There was an opportunity here to sit back and say, you know, I'm not sure the size of these hospitals, but actually, you know, 1,000 patients seems low. And actually, now that we say that, $100,000 in fixed costs, like that seems really low. So, I recognize perhaps we're using ballpark figures. Maybe we're still at the beginning of the project, but I would definitely want to validate some of these numbers, dive into the costs and revenues deeper to make sure that we're having the right perspective at the service level. And so that type of gut check is a level two, level three type of insight, right? To kind of sit back and say, but does this make sense though? Right. In this context, in the especially healthcare in the U.S., these are low numbers, particularly for that kind of fixed cost area. Then we moved into, well, actually, we could even get below 500 patients. And so let me give you this stuff that you don't really know about. Right. Like, OK, discount rate, hurdle rate, exit costs. Like, what do those mean? You approach that in a like top-notch fashion, gold star, kind of best in practice. I love the way that you responded to that. You were upfront from the beginning that you weren't sure what was fully going on here, but you said something to the effect of, but let me try and talk through it, right? Let me try and figure out if we can kind of rationalize, reason what's going on here. And so for those of you who come up against these challenging situations in a case, that's what I want you to do, right? Start to talk it through. Count your interviewer not as your, they're not an antagonist in this situation, right? Like they want to see you succeed. They want to help you, but you have to start to help yourself, right? And you start to help yourself and you start to try and make sense of it. And then the interviewer can help lean in those situations. Again, even more so with the gradation of there are different things that are expected of an undergrad interviewer versus a PhD candidate versus a advanced degree hire, other advanced degree hire or professional hire or MBA hire, and we know that not everybody knows everything about everything. And I know that discount rate and hurdle rate aren't exactly the same thing. I used both phrases here to see if that would help trigger a little bit of thinking around what we might do with this information and how we would use this information in a basic formula. And then we walked through it together, and that was completely okay. So I like the way that you externally processed through this part of the case and this information. I leaned in to help give a little bit of insight here and there. You did the math correctly, quickly, and I nudged a little bit more. I'd have to go back and look at the replay again, but I think I nudged a little bit more again about, is there any kind of extra takeaway you have here? Or, is there, what do you think about this? And so just that other push again about, we always want to layer on insights along each part in the case. There was one final math portion here about the comparison of reporting from the government in terms of upcoming legislation versus what the hospital found. And you did the basic calculation to say 7.5% from the hospital's information seems to fall within the government report saying 6 to 9% would be saved by passing the new legislation. And so that all seems to match up. Okay, what do you think about that? Like what, the one thing that you verbalized upfront in your answer to this question was, I'm going to go ahead and assume that this hospital, that this hospital's numbers, or I can't remember what you said exactly, but this hospital's similar to other hospitals. And that's the one, that was the just kind of slight miss, right? In terms of, well, you didn't need to assume that to be able to answer this question. And in terms of sitting back and, kind of having extra insights or context or thoughts about this, layering on insights, there was an opportunity here to say, okay, it is true for this one hospital system. It is true for K Grace. But in terms of this government report being correct overall, we certainly would want to compare that against similar data from other hospital systems. Perhaps hospitals that work in different, regional locations around the U.S. or, work with slightly different mixes of their service and care. We'd want to make sure that still maintains consistent in this 6 to 9% range. So I wouldn't count that as answering incorrectly. I just think it was a little bit of a missed opportunity to be able to lean in and say that that's what you would want to do with that next. Finally, we went to an overall recommendation and you gave me some thoughts about what you thought about that point in time. I did push and ask another question about next steps. It was pretty easy for me to tell that you didn't take that prompt as the kind of final recommendation, closing part to the case, which is okay, which happens, right? I wouldn't ding you on that necessarily. However, I still am overall looking for a focused, concise, direct, and structured response in terms of what you think about, you know, what we've done so far, and what do you think about what should happen next? And you gave me some great ideas. You showed your creative thinking. I think you demonstrated even good brainstorming in this last portion of the case. There just would have been another, opportunity to take it up a notch in terms of the structure of that communication as you went through it. With that being said, I think that you went through and did the quantitative portions really well. You didn't have any kind of errors or problems in the math. You largely, externally communicated and verbalized through your problem solving and through your structure. The overall structure was good, but some room for improvement that we've covered over different parts of the case. Your communication was easy and fluid and dynamic. It did feel a little low energy or perhaps monotonous at some points, right? And that can just be based on personality or kind of getting wrapped up in the, being very kind of just thinking driven and being in your head, but always something that we want to work on in terms of being game day ready for that big interview. But with that being said, it was a good case. You did a great job. It was a tough thing to wrap your head around. And, I wish you the best at LEK in the fall.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Tomasz did a very nice job throughout the case. I'll highlight again how calmly he problem solved through the portions he didn't initially understand and my pushback as well. If you'd like help in your case interview process or would like to simulate the live interview experience, consider working with one of our coaches at Management Consulted. Our coaches are all ex-McKinsey, Bain, or BCG consultants and interviewers who love working with prospective candidates to firm up their weaknesses and make their strengths shine. Our coaches help work through general application questions, resume edits, cover letter edits, and fit interview questions as well. You can find a link in the show notes or read more about our offerings at www.managementconsulted.com.